You're listening to Turkish Football Weekly, available on the World Football Daily Club podcast feed. If you're a member of World Football Daily, you can go to the site and stream the show anytime to your computer, mobile phone, or tablet without having to download or sync anything. If you're not a member of World Football Daily, just search World Football Daily Club podcast in the iTunes store and download the World Football Daily Club podcast feed for free. Enjoy the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Turkish Football Weekly for the week of November 21st, 2013. My name is Atta Dizdar, and joining me once again is Jeremy Chapman. Jeremy, are you still in Florida by chance?
Yeah, I am. I won't be here next week, but I'm enjoying the sunshine while it lasts. I was actually in Orlando the other day when they made the official announcement about the expansion MLS team there. So it's been a good week of I've still been able to enjoy football or soccer with some like-minded fans, even though I'm been away from home for the last few weeks.
All right, then.
How are things up your way?
Well, it's getting a little bit colder, of course, and winter is coming, so to speak. And also joining us this week, kind of unexpectedly, actually, he just decided to pop in, and we decided to talk, and just wanted to come on in and discuss some good football about Turkey, is our pundit in Belgium, Khan Bayezid. Khan, how is Belgium?
Well, it snowed for the first time yesterday, Alta, this year.
Okay, so, not a winter wonderland as of yet, I'm assuming?
Nah, it melted straight away, so, my little puppy dog was all wet when she went outside.
All right, then. So let's get to the Turkish national team friendlies that happened over the international break. Before then, I mentioned last week that Fatih Terim had signed a 5-year deal with an option for an additional 2 years before the Turkey-Northern Ireland match. Turkey winning that match 1-0 with a goal from Mevlüt Erdinç, scoring the only goal before halftime. He was actually assisted by Bilal Kısa of Akhisar Belediyespor. And it just seems to me as though, like, this is just more, trying new players out, trying new ideas. And, Turkey also beat a Belarus 2-1. That was in Mersin, Umut Bulut and Burak Yılmaz scoring the goals for Turkey there, while Vitali Rodanov scoring the only goal for Belarus. And, when we see the players that made their debut in this game for the Belarus game, we saw Aytaç Kara and Uğur Çiftçi of Eskişehirspor and Gençler Birliği respectively. But in the Turkey-Northern Ireland match, we saw Adem Büyük of Kasımpaşa, Salih Uçan of Fenerbahçe, Tarık Çamdal of Eskişehirspor, and İshak Doğan of Karabükspor. It's just more or less now, this is the time to really experiment. And I think, signing Fatih Terim to a long-term deal, whether it should be this long, well, that's maybe up for debate. But really, at this point, we're seeing that it's best to experiment now instead of experimenting later on. And Jeremy, what did you think of, both matches? Because I think the real focus is, let's see how these new players fit into the squad.
Yeah, and that's sort of been the goal of this one. Like you said, I wasn't able to watch these matches live. Obviously, the results weren't surprising with Turkey able to take on these relatively weaker clubs. Just from reading about some of the matches, it seems Turkey played pretty carefully against these clubs. They didn't, they didn't just squander the opportunities, they kind of respected their opponents by really taking the game seriously. And really that result against Belarus was only courtesy of Burak Yılmaz doing sort of what he's known to do, which is score in the last 5 minutes of a game. I feel like he's going to turn his name into a verb pretty soon if he keeps doing that, it's Burak Yılmaz is like it's he seems to score in the last 5 minutes of the games all the time. So that's nice. But it's obviously encouraging to see some of these younger, newer players, or you know, from smaller teams, shining a little bit. But also to have the veterans playing well, you know, as well. That first goal against Belarus, coming from a nice cross from Marta Turan, and good to see them, you know, clicking with some of these newer players on the team for sure.
And Khan, I mean, did you find any issue with the games at all? I know you probably watched both games. What did you think of the new players first off, you know, the recent caps that have been handed out to the players I had previously mentioned? And what did you think of how the team played?
Well, I think Turkey played okay in the first half against Ireland. But in all, I think with all the experimenting, kind of, you know, they get the result in the end. But, you know, you're playing against much lower profile teams, you know, if we'd be countering these teams in the qualifying round, I think we'd hope to win with a bigger margin. But of course, in friendlies, it's a good time to experiment. I like the fact that he's calling up young guys from other teams, from smaller teams. But at the same time, you know, calling up a guy like Bilal Kisha, you know, okay, I get it. He's playing good for Rocky Sharp. Guy's 30 years old. He's not gonna be there in 2016 if we qualify for the European Championship. Let's be realistic. You know, I'm all for giving a chance to guys from smaller teams, but there's no point in giving a chance to a guy who's already 30 years old and he's never going to be a contributor to this team. Then why don't you give a shot to a guy like Sedat Gürle or something, a younger player from a team that's doing well, or there's plenty of guys out there. I was happy to see some guys from Beşiktaş getting included, of course. Ozan getting a 45 minutes. Didn't do all that impressive, in my opinion. He's doing better for club than he's doing for country right now, but, you know, just got back from an injury. I think towards the future, he might be an interesting option in midfield. But, of course, you know, central midfield is one of the positions where we have quite a bit of quality, young players. Hopefully, we can convince Emre Can from Leverkusen to join the Turkish national team towards the future. We have Nuri Şahin, of course. Wasn't included because Jurgen Klopp requested him, you know, not be played, I believe. But we've got quite a bit of quality there. Got some quality on the flanks, some young guys coming up there. It's mainly going to be, you know, the defense. Ömer Toprak seems like a very good defender. We've already seen it in the last couple of qualification games. But there's Simi Şentürk, who has, Simi Kaya, who has lots of potential, of course, but who probably needs somebody next to him that can guide him still a little bit in his development. Yeah, it's good to see Fatih Terim experiment and not just go by club politics for his selection process. But like I said, I don't see the point in selecting a 30-year-old Bilal Kisha.
You know, it comes off as this is one of those Hamza Olu lobbying things, because you know Hamza Olu is coach of Akhisar Belediyespor, so...
Maybe if Bilal Kisha was 24 years old or something, I'd say, yeah, sure, why not, you know? But he's, like I said, 30 years old. In 2 years, when the next tournament's there, he'll be 32. He plays in a position where we have so much younger, better players. Why call him up? Why give him a chance? It's like throwing the guy a bone, but you're never really going to use him anyway. Why don't you test out somebody that you're actually planning on using down the road? Yeah. There's plenty of good guys in Germany, good young players. Mm.
Jeremy, I mean, why don't you put in some thoughts on that? But I guess maybe we could wrap up this part of the podcast. I mean, if we were to really wrap up this part of it, I guess it's good to see Fatih Terim get signed to a long-term deal and perhaps go outside the box with some of the players, although... from what Khan's arguing, you know, Bilal Kisha, that may not be good going for the future, but we see that Terim is now experimenting, and we've been calling for that for a while in terms of the experimentation. Of course, that really didn't happen under Abdullah Avcı because, well, the only person he really called up that was out of the box was Sercan Sarıyer, who didn't play in any of these games. But I guess maybe we could get your final thoughts on the whole international friendly weekend for Turkey.
Yeah, I definitely agree with Khan's point. It was that was sort of one of those surprise moves, surprising but not for like necessarily a really good reason. Sort of why would he be called up? But sometimes just having that experience on the field maybe to help guide some of the younger players. Maybe something like that was the idea. Kind of like get some of the veterans out there with some of the new guys. At least is the only thing I can think of to sort of excuse Fatih Terim for that call. The fact that Fatih Terim's not having to worry about Galatasaray anymore perhaps makes it even easier for him to kind of draw from these clubs outside of Galatasaray and outside of Istanbul, especially. So that's pretty interesting. I think obviously it's going to be a while until we have a match, that's not a friendly to kind of really put Turkey to the test. But they've got to take advantage of the time until then to try to pick their players and put something together that's not just, simply pulling all the best players, but also getting them to work well together. Because, obviously right now the national team's a bit of a slump.
Yeah, at least, Sergen Sarr is a player with an upside. He's, 23 years old. And he plays for a relatively decent team, Stuttgart, and there's, I believe he's played for Stuttgart, right?
Yeah, he plays for Stuttgart. He's currently playing with them.
And that's not, that's not a completely out-of-the-box selection there. A young player in an attacking midfield role, that towards the future can maybe, become maybe not a first-team player, because we do have Arda that can, I see him moving to that number 10 role towards the future, probably, with younger, faster wingers coming in. But Arda, of course, being a very important player for this team, I could see him maybe being a backup for Arda or something. But I don't see the point in selecting a 30-year-old that doesn't have any experience at really that much of a high level. He's always played for relatively small teams. I just think it's a waste of a friendly there. These friendlies, like Jeremy pointed out, we don't have any important games for quite some time, and these friendlies are the only way for Terim to really assess what kind of meat he's got in the bowl, so to speak. And I think he has to use that time and those opportunities wisely and not squander them on somebody you're never going to use. Call up somebody, a young German or something, a young German Turk or a young Austrian Turk or whatever. There's plenty of guys out there in the German league that you can use. Try and twist Emre Can's arm. Get him in, seriously, big talent. I can't stress that anymore, and he's a great player, great talent, and hopefully, we can get him, because Germany have a lot of quality in that department. So yeah.
One player I wanted to mention, that because I just thought of him, because on my Twitter account today I was seeing something from some Scotsmen. How about Nadir Chifchi of Dundee? He's playing for Dundee United at the moment. You might be familiar with him, Khan, because he played for Breda.
I honestly haven't seen him play. I've been aware of his existence, from football forums, but I haven't seen him play, so I wouldn't be able to shed any light on that. But, there's guys like Samad Yishil, for example. Why don't we give them some playing time,
Well, I've heard that Samad Yishil, his dad said the TFF made some promises to him and they never kept them, so he doesn't want his son to play for the Turkish national team, but it's really up to him, so...
That's a shame, and because it's not every day that we have a young Turk in the youth ranks of Liverpool, Chelsea, teams like that. We have a nice amount of young players that have a Premier League experience that used to train with the big boys, and that's a big thing for young players. I don't know if you saw Slaven Bilic's interview the other day, but he mentioned this, and I think a lot of coaches agree with this as well, that for a young player to be able to train with high-quality, high-profile players is already so important for their development. And players like Gökhan Töre, who played at Chelsea for several years, Ozan Özyakup at Arsenal, Samet Yeşil at Liverpool, Kerim Fay, who played for Fulham, that's lower profile club, but we have so many guys that come from the Bayern Munich. Emre Can comes from the Bayern Munich academy.
There's a lot of players out there in the diaspora that are waiting to be picked up by Turkey, but
exactly. And if you call up for example Erman Kilic, I could to a degree understand, because he's a little bit underrated, but he's always done really well. You know, he did really well at Sivasspor. He's doing really well at Eskişehirspor right now. He's an underrated player that I think deserves a call up more than a Bilal Kisha. And I don't think we're going to be using an Erman Kilic towards the future all that much, but at least, you know, I could grasp that. But I mean, I don't want to sound like a Bilal Kisha hater or anything. I have nothing against the guy because I'm totally like hammering him down to the ground. It's not my intention, but I just don't see the point. And it's great for him that he gets an opportunity and you know, but for Turkey, I like I said, I think it's a waste of an opportunity to test out other players.
Interesting. All right, then let's transition now to news going around the world of Turkish football. Then UEFA have announced that Trabzonspor will receive their prize money from the Europa League this season after rectifying their situation with overdue payables. This had to do with the 900,000 euros being owed to former Trabzonspor player Kiki Masampa. And the TFF Appeals Board has upheld Antalyaspor forwards Milan Baroš's 3-match suspension for harsh dissent and a match official. I guess we can talk about Trabzonspor first because, you know, I'm expecting a lot more of these financial fair play sanctions. And, you know, we saw Fenerbahce and Eskişehirspor of the previous season, and now we're seeing Trabzonspor this season. You know, they got everything corrected. And obviously, they've now paid their dues to Kiki Masampa. But I want to start off with Jeremy first. It just seems as though to me that we're going to be hearing about this, you know, for Turkish clubs. You know, there has been that Bloomberg article a few weeks ago talking about the financial issues of the major Turkish clubs, at least the ones on the stock market. It just seems as though that UEFA are taking this financial fair play plan pretty seriously, although I still have my doubts as to whether they will enforce it across the board or not. But Trabzonspor does get their money, but you know, considering Trabzonspor's economic troubles in terms of their finances, maybe perhaps we'll be seeing more of these, not only for Trabzonspor but for other Turkish clubs.
Yeah, you know, it seems pretty spelled out to me, and it seems pretty black and white. You know, they basically say you're not going to get any prize money until you figure this problem out, which I think is, yeah, it may seem harsh, but at least it's not convoluted or anything. It's pretty straightforward, and it certainly therefore would make it worth it for Trabzonspor to resolve that situation quickly. I mean, you know, the prize money from the Europa League surely amounts to more than what is owed you know, in those overdue payments to their players. So I don't know why it seems in Turkish football every season you have a couple of clubs that are just, you know, can't seem to pay their players or have other financial sort of issues going on. But I think in this case, because it involves UEFA as well, there's that extra incentive, you know, to kind of get things done. And the fact that, you know, I didn't even know UEFA had that kind of power to just cut payments for prize money, but it
makes sense. Well, they pay it, so.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I didn't know if I mean, I didn't know sort of what the nature of their contract is with the teams when it comes to, you know, I didn't know that they could kind of dip into that to
show their weight around.
Yeah, that's basically
it is. Cross that, connect those two things. Yeah, exactly. But I mean, you know, it doesn't surprise me that they can, and it doesn't bother me that they are. In this case, because you got to pay your players, and I think Trabzonspor will now.
Yeah,
right?
But speaking of that, remember, like a few weeks ago, you know, we reported that Volkan Şen had to show up with his lawyer just to get some back pay, and then in the summer, Halil Altıntop wasn't getting paid by the club, so he terminated his contract. He went to Augsburg, and you know, for some clubs, it's actually kind of a big problem. You know, for Galatasaray, we know they've been in debt for a while, but, you know, they're still pretty okay in terms of paying their players, but not so much for Trabzonspor. Maybe, you know, maybe Khan, you might have some insight on this. But, you know, we've had a bunch of problems, and we've heard a lot of stories about how teams are kind of skimping on payments to their players. I mean, this isn't the first time, you know, we've heard this before, but, you know, Trabzonspor, I mean, recently, we haven't seen them, you know, pay their players on time. You know, some of the players, you know, were owed back pay, but, you know, everything's been caught up. And now with this, I mean, they've caught up with something from years ago. So it's not really looking too good, you know, in terms of Turkish football's reputation, or at least for Trabzonspor's reputation, for them not paying any players.
Well, you know, I think the financial fair play, whether it's being applied across the board or not, is a good initiative by UEFA, because we've seen that several clubs in Turkey, and not just in Turkey, of course, but you know, we focus on that, so let's talk about that. You know, Beşiktaş, for example, the previous board, you know, under Yıldırım Demirören, had quite a bit of money owed to ex-players and ex-coaches, and we see that with Trabzonspor now as well. Let's be honest, Kiki Musampa, that wasn't player that was in the club when the current board of Trabzonspor was appointed. So it's not like their mess, they are basically cleaning up somebody else's mess, and was the same for Beşiktaş, of course. But, you know, these players, you know, whether they deserved the big fat contracts that they had, you know, Vicente del Bosque, who earned a lot of money, got a big fat contract at Beşiktaş, it didn't really do much. But, you know, if you agree to a certain amount of money with somebody, you have to pay them. That's how simple it is. You know, if you have a contract with someone, whether they perform to your expectations or not, you have to pay them. Unless you are smart enough to give them a contract that is, you know, attached to performance, which in these cases, of course, wasn't. So, you know, Matteo Ferrari, now Kiki Musampa, and we saw at the beginning of the season with Sol Bamba, I believe, it had some back pay owed, and of course now Volkan Şen as well. You know, these guys, you know, I think the problem is, for example, Volkan Şen now, is that he's not really delivering how they would have wanted him to. Plus, then there was the entire debacle with, you know, with his mother dying and the fans giving him a hard time about that, and then he, you know, bursting into tears, and then Hagi Osmanoğlu, you know, basically putting him
down. You mean, you know, he was just saying the effect of, "Well, I wouldn't want this kind of player on my team."
Yeah, exactly. I have kind of the impression that they're kind of trying to bully him away, and maybe convincing him for a mutual termination or something, I don't know, but I think they're probably looking to offload him in the winter, and yeah, it's just a very unprofessional way of handling things, and we've seen this throughout, you know, the last decade, that there's a lot of Turkish clubs have had, you know, issues with back pay, you know, Ankara Gücü, Galatasaray in the past, and then, you know, other clubs that have, you know, gotten relatively high profile foreigners, and you know, they lured them here with big fat juicy contracts and, you know, low taxes as well, but then they don't pay them if they don't perform. It's a little bit of a
it's a little unfair, because at the end of the day, you know, you signed the contract. I don't see how complicated it is. I mean, you write up the terms of the contract. Exactly. Just because you wrote up the contract doesn't mean that you could just skimp on it. You know, you have to put up your end of the bargain too. And like we saw with Volkan Şen earlier on, for example, you had mentioned Sol Bamba. Like we saw with Volkan Şen, he had to come with his lawyer just to come in and say, "Hey, where's my back pay?" Otherwise, you know, he has the right to sue for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And but I think the mentality in Turkey is very wrong. I think that the people in charge of the clubs, they have a little bit of an unprofessional attitude of, well, you know, if you don't perform up to our standards, what we expect of you, then we're not going to pay you. And that may have worked in the 90s and in the 80s or whatever, but, you know, now slowly UEFA is catching up with this. And, you know, you can say what you want about, you know, Paris Saint-Germain and Monaco and all those clubs, you know, that are spending money that they don't really have, but at least they're paying their players. Now, the way that they're getting that money, it's not appropriate. It's unfair competition for other clubs in Europe, and there's definitely something to be said about that. But their issue isn't that they're not paying people that they're owed money to. Their issue is, where are they getting this money from? But that's another discussion. And in Turkey, the problem, I think, is, well, like you said, the back pay, and it's something that I think is kind of a sour note on Turkish football. And it's something that definitely I've noticed over the last decade, that Turkey has a little bit of a negative reputation because of the many cases of failing to pay players.
Right. Let's move on to Milan Baroš before we move on to who Gaziantepspor have appointed as their new manager. He gets his 3-match suspension upheld, and, you know, it just seemed to me when I watched the replay, I really don't see what's going on with him, because, you know, he's kind of had a reputation for being a hothead himself, you know, cursing at referees maybe had something to do with that. But let me get both of your quick thoughts on it before we get to our discussion about Gaziantep's new manager. Jeremy, you first. I mean, what did you think?
You know, it seems to me in other leagues, you know, and in international play, the officials seem to have a higher tolerance for harsh words than in Turkey, or maybe that's just me, but it seems like what could he really have said? And everybody, it seems in Turkish football, every call is argued, you know, there isn't really a lot of just kind of letting it go that happens. But, you know, on the other hand, they are just words, and of course it is up to the official what's bookable and that kind of thing. You know clearly the suspension has more to do with the dissent than the original call, which, like, I agree with you, was it was a bad call. And I remember thinking at the time, yeah, Milan Baroš is justified to complain about that call, especially because it was in sort of a dangerous area. But dissent, I mean, his Turkish can't be that good. I mean, he couldn't have said anything that was, like, really, that was, like, if he said something threatening, and I don't know what he said. it just seems like kind of a weak thing to suspend somebody for 3 matches on, when it seems to happen all the time, number one. And secondly, it's whatever he said, he couldn't have been serious. I don't know. I'm not close enough to it, obviously, but I don't get a good feeling when somebody gets suspended 3 matches for using bad words. I think that's kind of lame.
All right, Con, let's get your thoughts on it.
Well, you know, we've seen quite a few controversial, suspensions, red cards this so far this season. And I think the level of refereeing in Turkey is just abysmal. I think it's definitely something that's one of the fundamental things that needs improvement if we really want to see, you know, Turkish football grow, become bigger. Now we're implementing a new foreigner rule next year. You know, there'll be a 5-player cap and an 8 in your team. I think there's better things to improve, and officiating is definitely on the top of that list. Baroš, you know, we spoke about it off air earlier. Like, I really didn't see what he did wrong, and I can only imagine that he said something along the lines of F off or something in English, because, like Jeremy said, you know, his Turkish can't be all that great. You know, Baroš has had some of these red cards in the past, some of these issues, you know, even when he just joined Galatasaray. He had an amazing first season. Even then, he got a couple of those red cards because he kind of went off the rails. But I think, especially in the second season, he had some issues with that. But I don't really think it's justifiable to suspend a player for 3 games when he does something, you know, when he says something. And then, for example, earlier this season, Gustavo Kolman, with his murderous tackle on Mustafa Bektemek, he doesn't even get a slap on the wrist. He doesn't get anything, you know. There's much worse stuff going on the pitches in Turkey. You know, it seems like every year it's the same thing, you know. Players get suspended for silly stuff. Like last year, you know, Raul Moraes got suspended for a gesture. And then, you know, players who kick other players in the groin, yeah, they get a slap on the wrist, basically. It's kind of, yeah, the logic is...
It's like we've entered a new era, because, I mean, nowadays it's not just this dissent on the pitch, but, you know, we've seen this season they've been tightening down on the fan behavior and things like that, you know, fining teams for fans being, you know, too rough or chanting things which are, you know, political or otherwise offensive one way or the other. And so it's like this seems to kind of fall in line with that mentality in Turkey, which is like, let's try to really control these people's behavior, including what they say. So I mean, which has sort of been kind of a theme of ours this season, you know, about them kind of cracking down on the fans as well. But this seems to be along that same line of thinking, this kind of harsh response to just some very, you know, vague, as Kant seems to suggest, the criticism was from Milan Baroš. The words used seem to be, you know, perhaps international and not that specific, just because of the language barrier. So right. I don't like this trend, obviously, but it just kind of reminded me of this, of how they're cracking down on the fans more these days too.
Yeah, I don't know what Barros said to really warrant such a direct red card action, but I don't know. It's a lot of the things the PFDK doesn't make any sense to me, but then again,
yeah,
it's Turkey. What did you expect? So actually, let's move on to the major news of the week. The major coaching news of the week is that Gaziantepspor have appointed Sergen Yalcin, who had been working as a TV pundit, to a 1.5-year deal to become their new manager. He will be paid $100,000 a month and will receive a $1 million bonus should he keep Gaziantepspor in the Super League this season. So, Khan, you had been familiar with Sergen Yalcin because of his time at Beşiktaş, but you had also told me that it was basically kind of a surprising appointment. At least I think it was a kind of a surprising appointment because I didn't think he really didn't have much experience in terms of coaching. But you did tell me that he was a youth coach at Beşiktaş for a while.
Yeah, he was the youth coach in the 2008-2009 season for the under-15s under Ertuğrul Salam, who was the head coach then at Beşiktaş, who now, of course, coaches Eskişehirspor. Yeah, so basically he coached the youths for a year. He did pretty well there. And then he started his UEFA B license. As you know, we don't have too many UEFA licensed coaches in Turkey at the moment. I think it's like 260 or something. Which, of course, you know, took him about 6 months. And then he became the coach of the A2 team at Beşiktaş under Mustafa Denizli, you know, who was the head coach then. But they didn't really see eye to eye too much because Mustafa Denizli didn't give young players a chance all that much. And, well, at least not enough in Sergen's eyes. And as you know, the A2 team is basically some methods for the younger players to find their way into the first team, but Sergen didn't appreciate that his advice for the youngsters wasn't being taken into account, and he resigned at the end of that season.
Okay, then, because I was thinking that this is a very out-of-the-box hire for Gaziantepspor. I mean, Jeremy, you listen to it. I mean, what do you think? Because to me, it seems as though that it's kind of out of the box, and you know, he doesn't have the experience of helming a Super League team. And yeah, Gaziantepspor, I mean, they're kind of desperate for wins at the moment. But we're looking at this situation, and considering that there are some guys like Hikmet Karaman and Yılmaz Vural available out there, I mean, what did you think of the coaching hire?
I think I definitely agree that it was a bit of a surprise move. And then, you know, when you look at the money, you know, that million, is it lira bonus?
$1 million bonus.
Oh, that's U.S. dollars, yeah. Then. But I mean, you look at that. So he's getting paid $100,000 a month, and then he gets, you know, 10 times his monthly salary if he keeps him in, which of course is you know, it's worth it for Gaziantepspor to stay up, of course. But you know, you look at the standings; they're not like in any real danger. We're, you know, barely a third of the way through the season. The way they're kind of handling this, you know, is sort of a team that has much higher expectations, certainly than fighting relegation. So on the one hand, it's like they're like desperately trying to put some distance between them and the bottom of the table. But on the other hand, they've gone with a guy who, like you say, isn't that experienced. You don't really know what to expect. I mean, it seems like he's only managed, you know, clubs that were not in the top flight.
Lower profile, not the experience at the highest level. But the thing I think for Antep is that I think they took quite a scare, I think, from Gençlerbirliği's recent good performances, because they were pretty low down there. And if you look at the table right now, you know, there's not really any team that you can say, well, they're definitely going to relegate this year, because if you look at all those relegation candidates, they've all got pretty good players. I mean, Kayserispor is the bottom team right now with 6 points, but if you've watched their games, they've actually played pretty well. They create a lot of chances. I think their problem is mainly that at the moment they're lacking a strong striker, which they always have had in the past couple of years, with Bobo being out injured, and they already have Nobre, who just got back out of injury, and he's not, you know, a dynamic forward like Bobo or Makukola. How the hell do you say that? And then Gökhan Ünal before that. So I think they're missing that guy that scores 15 to 20 goals, which Kayseri have always had, and their team is kind of built around that. But they have a lot of quality, so they're definitely not gonna stay down there. I predict once Bobo is back that they'll pick up the pace quite quickly. And then, you know, you've got Elazığspor. I think they're probably at the moment kind of the weakest out of all those teams that are candidates for relegation. They have some good players, you know, like Serdar Gürler, Serdar Özkan, and some others, but I don't really think they have that much individual quality, you know. And then there's teams you would say, okay, you know, Rizespor just came up, but they're already, you know, taken to the 10, you know, I think they have like 13, 14. How many points do they have?
Rizespor currently has 15 points, but.
Yeah, 15
because
points.
Because they had a really good start to the season, but now they've tailed off.
Yeah, but they've also, you know, had some tough opposition in recent weeks. I think they played Galatasaray not so long ago. They played Beşiktaş, which they got a point against. So they're doing pretty well, and they have a cushion right now. And then there's other teams, you know, like Kayserispor. They've got a pretty decent team. I mean, half their team's considerably from last year. Probably the reason why Gençlerbirliği started off so slow this year, and also the fact that they had Metin Diyadin as a coach, who I'm not the biggest fan of. But no, there's just, you know, usually there's always like one or two teams that you're like, okay, you know, they're definitely relegating because they don't have the quality. But right now, all these teams have some quality. You know, Konyaspor, they have some good players, and then of course they have their little devil in a box, Teofanis Gekas. Right. Antep have a lot of quality too, you know, with Muhammed Demir and with Cenk Tosun and then Halis Medunjanin, and they have so many good players, but all these teams have good players, and it's going to be very tough. Yeah.
But my thing is, you're kind of bringing in a guy who's got inexperienced at the highest level. I mean, Jeremy, you know, you were talking about it earlier, and it just seems to me that, yeah, we've seen that Yalcin has done well in the youth ranks at Beşiktaş, but coaching in the Super League is a much different animal to tame.
I think what Antep is hoping and speculating on is that he's got very good knowledge of the game. He's a very passionate man about the game. I mean, he was never the most professional player, as you probably know, but he lives for the game, and he watches so much football day in, day out. It's kind of like comparable to so many other great coaches. And I think he's got this little flamboyancy about him that I always had as a player. And I think they're hoping that he can bring that over to some of their players right now, because, you know, it's a gamble, definitely. Yeah. But like, if it doesn't work out, you know, if he, like, let's say they play 10 games and it doesn't do too well, they can still fire him and get Yılmaz Vural instead, and, you know, get him to save them from relegation.
Right.
Yeah, I liked what you were talking about, Can, with sort of mentioning Gaziantepspor's performance lately and comparing that to the performance of the other teams near them. It certainly have some competition, you know, down at the bottom of the table. Gaziantepspor has been on quite a bit of a skid lately. They've given up 13 goals in the last four matches and been shut out in the last two of those. And so they're basically bleeding goals at this point. So I guess it sounds like, and from what you're saying too, Ata, that, you know, maybe they're looking for Sergen to maybe bring a little bit of inspiration and change things up a little bit. It's, you know, on the one hand, it seems like a big gamble since he doesn't have any experience, but of course, everyone who coaches in the Super League had to start sometime. And it's always a bit of a risk at the beginning. It just seems like it would be, you know, the time to experiment would be sort of like when you've already secured a spot in the middle of the table and you've kind of got the rest of the season to play around with a new coach. But, you know, they could really come up looking pretty good after this move too.
Yeah. And I think they're planning some moves in the transfer window as well. I wouldn't be surprised if some of the guys on the Beşiktaş team right now who aren't getting too many playing time, or, you know, like a Filip Olosko, I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up there under the winter. Maybe just on loan, but wouldn't be the first time he got loaned out.
Yeah, but like you said, I mean, everybody's got to start from somewhere. And I think with Sergen Yalcin, yeah, I see that he's a pretty decent pundit, So it'll be interesting to see how that transitions into the coaching ranks. But as you know, might know, like, sometimes the best pundits don't make the best coaches. But from what Khan has been saying, at least maybe he might give younger players a shot. And yeah, they've got Mohamed Demir. They've got Artem Belevsky. They've got Haris Medunjanin. You know, they've got Cenk Tosun. They got good quality players. But obviously the problem is, can Sergen Yalcin be able to keep them together and keep them in the Super League?
They've got one of the best goalkeepers in the league, Karşımaskas.
Yeah, Zydrunas Karşımaskas. But I think the thing is, with the foreigner cap, obviously there had to be a lot of juggling in terms of who could play and who can't. And, you know, so there are times when Karşımaskas has had to, you know, sit on the bench or be sent to the stands because of the foreigner cap.
Yeah. I also think he had some injury issues.
I believe really? So, yeah.
So that might also be an explanation there.
I suppose that, sort of talking a little bit more about the timing of this move, Gaziantepspor's next match is against Elazığspor, and playing a team like Elazığ that is struggling the way they are, one of the few teams below them in the standings right now. You know,
it's a must-win game.
Definitely,
already.
But one which is winnable for the likes of Gaziantepspor. Even, you know, it's a home game against a weak team. It's really something that they should be able to handle. So it'll be a good test, because going into it, you kind of look at it, it's like Gaziantepspor should win this game 80 or 90% of the time. So I think it's kind of like a good first look. It's not like they're going to be up against some club that you really wouldn't expect them to beat, or they're going to be on the road or something like that. They've had a relatively difficult schedule so far this half season, and the teams that they've got left to play, they also have, you know, Kayseri Erciyesspor is also left to play, and you know, Gençler Birliği, Bursaspor. So, you know, there are some games that they could get some points from.
Right. Yeah, it seems as though, like, Sergen's going to be pretty much eased in this weekend, considering he's taking on, with Gaziantepspor, a very bottom-of-the-table team in Elazığspor, because Elazığspor, we haven't seen them really prove anything lately. And like Khan said, you know, they've got quality players like Serdar Güler, but if we're going to just bring it back to Sergen Yalcin's appointment, yeah, you're going to pay him a lot of money, but hopefully it does work out for them in the future. And maybe they are hoping for the shot in the arm that Mehmet Özdilek, when he got appointed, gave to Gençler Birliği, you know, in the sense that they're playing with purpose and things like that.
Yeah. Özdilek has much more experience, of course, and, you know, track record to show for it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, coaching Antalyaspor for, you know, previous 5 years definitely gives him a good track record. I think we're done with our discussion about Sergen Yalcin and Gaziantepspor. I think we still got some time. Why don't we just head into our little preview of the week 12. The schedule for week 12 is as follows. Saturday, the 23rd of November, Rizespor faces Kayserispor, Bursaspor hosts Kasımpaşa, and Galatasaray hosts Sivasspor. Sunday's matches will see Erciyesspor face Gençler Birliği, Gaziantepspor hosting Elazığspor, Trabzonspor hosting Eskişehirspor, and Antalyaspor hosting Fenerbahçe. And on Monday's schedule, Akçabeldiyespor is at home against Karabükspor, and Beşiktaş hosts Konyaspor. So I think the match of the week that probably everybody will be watching for is Galatasaray and Sivasspor, because you see Sivasspor, we're seeing them, they have a good amount of talent, you know, with Atif Şeşu leading the charge in the attack. I mean, I believe he's leading the league in goals at the moment, so it's a third versus sixth matchup, and I think that maybe we could see if Sivasspor is kind of real, because this is kind of one of their first big tests in the last few weeks. Now, Beşiktaş against Konyaspor, you know, maybe Khan can, you know, contribute a little bit to that. Konyaspor is kind of like an interesting team, but I'm pretty much expecting Beşiktaş to really get through that one kind of easily. And, you know, with Sunday's fair, you know, we talked about Gaziantepspor and Elazığspor. I think people will be looking more forward to that match to see how Sergen does as a first impression. But I'm going to start off with you, Jeremy. I mean, what matches catch your eye?
Definitely the ones you mentioned. I'm always curious to watch a Trabzonspor and Eskişehirspor, you know, since you've got two teams which are so very impressive on a good day. And Eskişehirspor is one of those teams that's, you know, and Trabzonspor too, just given how close they are to each other in the table and near the top of the table. They're two teams in fifth and seventh places, and Eskişehirspor is the team in fifth place. But, you know, a couple of teams where, you know, a win right now could really position them nicely to maybe occupy, you know, one of the top four spots. So they'll really be fighting for it, and I think there will be a lot of good competition in that one. But, you know, it's kind of interesting. You know, I think Konyaspor you know, might have a chance against Beşiktaş because, you know, Beşiktaş, they have kind of a way of sometimes giving up an easy match, even at home. And they are pretty strong. We were mentioning it last week, you know, in games in which Beşiktaş scores, they tend to score lots of goals and win. There's only one match which they haven't scored, one match which they've scored and didn't win, I guess I should say. But Konya was the team that was responsible for shutting out Antalyaspor last weekend, which was something that no one could seem to do lately. So they've got some talent, but yeah, on the road it might be a little bit tough for them. So I think it'll be a good match anyway. Monday night football, if you will, Beşiktaş and Konya. Do you have more to say about that, Con? Are you looking forward to the match as much?
I've got quite a few games I'm actually looking forward to, because there's Bursaspor against Kasımpaşa, which is going to be very interesting, because so far to me, Kasımpaşa has been the most impressive team in the Super League this season. They were very unlucky to lose to Fenerbahçe, but I don't know if you saw that match, but they were very strong. They probably got a little bit less than they deserved there. But apart from that game, I think they've pretty much gotten the points in every match. I think they only lost once, if I'm not mistaken. And they've been racking up the 3-0 victories recently, and they've just been very impressive. You know, Oscar Scarione has been an amazing signing for them, and I thought that Kalu Uche leaving them would be a little bit of a damper on them, but no, you know, they don't have that scoring striker anymore, but now they've got somebody in midfield that's scoring a lot of goals. They still got Tabare Viudes. They got in Ryan Donk in the back, which they definitely needed. I think last season they were a little bit unstable in the back, but that did help. He's not the best defender in the world, but he's a decent defender, you know. And then they got Ryan Babel, of course, up front as well. Decent player. Not worth the money, as I said earlier this year, but he's a good player still. And then there's Bursaspor, you know. They've got some stuff to make up for. They've been off and on a little bit. They've had some good results, and they had some bad results, especially for their fans. I think the 3-0 at home against Beşiktaş wasn't too pleasing. But, you know, they've got very good players, of course, you know, with Bataja, magnificent player. So that's going to be very interesting. And Galatasaray-Sivasspor, very interesting match. I do think Galatasaray will probably win it because, you know, Sivas, they've been good this season, but then against Fenerbahce, they also lost against Fenerbahce, and so did Kasımpaşa. But Sivas didn't seem to be able to form a real threat there, whilst to me, Kasımpaşa looked like the better team and looked like they were going to win, but then they lost it in like the last seconds, I think the 93rd or 94th minute there.
Right.
And then, of course, you know, the match you mentioned, Jeremy, Trabzon against Eskişehir, also two teams that are a little bit, you know, they've got some good results. They've got some bad results. Eskişehir, of course, you know, being coached by Abdul Salam, who I think is one of the best coaches in the country still. And I wouldn't be surprised if Eskişehir pull off a victory there, because Trabzon, they've gotten some good results, but they don't come across to me as a really solid team right now. And then, of course, you know, the Monday match, Beşiktaş versus Konya. Like Jeremy said, you know, I wouldn't be too surprised if Konya got something out of that game, because Beşiktaş have been pretty strong away from home, but because of the suspension partially, I imagine, as well, the home games, we've been losing some points there. And I hope we can pull off a win. We've had plenty of time to prepare for this match, but Konya is a team that can surprise many. And if the players underestimate them, then, or just, you know, like against Riza and against Karabükspor, Beşiktaş created plenty of chances but didn't score. And like Jeremy also pointed out, if Beşiktaş score, they're likely to win it, but if they don't, then they won't win, of course. That speaks for itself. And then one more match, the Gaziantep versus Elazığspor match is going to be very interesting as well, not just because of Sergen Yalçın, but also because this is a very crucial game early on in the season for the relegation spots. I wouldn't write off Elazığ, because, like I said, they do have some quality, but Gaziantep at home should win that match. They owe it to themselves to do so. Otherwise, they're going to be putting themselves in a really awkward position.
Yeah, of course, Elazığ has lost seven straight now. So
yeah, that's mean, not
Yeah, you don't want to be the team that's responsible for another team ending their really long losing streak.
Yeah, but that also puts the pressure on Gaziantepspor more than it does on Alizé.
Yeah,
I think so. I'm curious to see if Ibrahim Akin will make his reappearance in the Super League.
Yeah, that should be interesting to see him back. But I guess let's just quickly go to some European stuff. We know that Galatasaray is facing Real Madrid coming up in the Champions League. And then Trabzonspor will be facing Apollon in the Europa League. So, you know, for Galatasaray, I mean, this is basically do or die at the moment. I mean, Jeremy, you know, you've been the one who was the expert on the Danish League, but I think we both discussed it at the time. You know, you said that, you know, it should be pretty easy for Galatasaray to get 6 points off of Copenhagen. Well, that didn't happen, as we all saw. But, you know, for this, I mean, I don't know if Galatasaray really has the quality, you know, going to, you know, the Bernabeu, if you will, and getting a result from that. I mean, it just doesn't look very likely for me.
Yeah, you know, and to Copenhagen's credit, they have dramatically picked up their performance in the league over the last couple of months, too. So, Galatasaray.
Well, it was difficult. They were last, I believe, ever since they sacked, what's his name, the Belgian coach. I forgot his name for a second. They've been doing much better now, but yeah.
Oh yeah.
Sorry to interrupt there, but yeah.
No. It's true. Like, so they're really a different club than they were when they were at the bottom of the table, you know, four matches in. But I guess it's really more about Galatasaray. I was talking with a Juve fan last week about this, who was basically saying that, you know, we were having a discussion about what an incredible matchup that was going to be. And I said, yeah, but Galatasaray is one of those teams that tends to perform better, you know, when they have to. And he's like, you just described Juventus. So I think we're going to have sort of two teams which respond under pressure in these sorts of situations. And, you know, so I think it'll be good. I have a little bit more optimism for them. For Galatasaray than you do, Atta, I think, but that might just be my fan bias. But they did have a good match, an away match. They were able to get the draw on the road 2-2. So having them at home, just looking at that, I think Galatasaray and the players feel they've got the confidence from that first leg, getting a point on the road, that they know they can win this. It'll just be a matter of, can they keep their composure, especially can their defense, not get sort of outsmarted. And it seems to be the case with Galatasaray. If they can just avoid defensive blunders, then and keep the confidence up from their first leg, I think they'll have a chance.
Yeah, definitely. So there is a reason why they play the game, but you know, we saw what happened with Galatasaray early on in the Champions League, and well, they got walloped 6-1. And I don't know if y'all saw Ronaldo's performance in that second leg against Sweden for Portugal. You know, he's like on fire at the moment, but it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Oh,
66 goals this year, 2013.
Yeah,
so
that's insane.
But the thing is, I mean, Galatasaray, wouldn't it in theory be better? Okay, you know, for the financial aspect, of course, you know, they have to get to the next round of the Champions League, but from a sportive point of view, wouldn't it be much better for them to go to the Europa League, because they've got some really good players and they actually have the potential to go further there? And, you know, maybe, you know, we saw last year Fenerbahce got to the semis. Why not Galatasaray? You know, why not? You know, it depends who you come across, of course, but, you know, with a little bit of luck and the draw, and could, you know, get a very, very good European season in there. And of course, they'll have confidence from the first leg against Juventus, but I think they kind of stole it there, because if you look at that game, I mean, how many chances Juventus missed, which isn't their usual doing, but I think Juventus will be very keen on, you know, putting that right.
That draw to be righted,
yeah.
Things like that.
And Juventus isn't some pushover team that has off days all that often. If you look there, the last couple of years in the Serie A. They're very dumb.
They've yet to win a match in this group, you know.
Yeah.
And, so you could say, I mean, they'll be maybe trying to cover up that embarrassment by getting something in Istanbul. Maybe all that more that'll provide that much more motivation, I suppose.
Right. They haven't won a match yet, but then they have only lost against Real Madrid once, and they've lost points against Galatasaray and Copenhagen, but it's not like for them, it's not like it's do or die yet. You know, if they get a point in Istanbul and there's no big problem. Galatasaray kind of have to win because they lost against Copenhagen, so the pressure will be there. I think Juventus...
And Galatasaray's match after this, of course, will be away to Real Madrid, so it's
no,
not...
No, Galatasaray's match after this will be at home to Juventus.
Oh, yeah. Or the one the one before.
Yeah, we're talking about at the moment.
Right. No, I guess my point is that they're not likely to get any more points before they face each other.
Right. Before Galatasaray faces Juventus on the last day.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's quickly transition over to Trabzonspor. They're on top of Group J in the Europa League. A win, a draw, or a 1-0 defeat would put Trabzonspor through to the next round. Basically, they're facing Apollon of Cyprus. So if Trabzonspor wins, they're basically on to the next round. And, you know, if Lazio also beats Legia Warsaw, then it's all to play for in terms of who wins the group on the last match day. But I guess really briefly, I don't think Trabzonspor is going to have that many problems with Apollon, especially because this match is at home.
Yeah, I mean, they beat them on the road 2-1 in the first leg of this tie. You know, Apollon, they're not that team that, you know, everybody's beating. They did get a point out of their home match with Lazio, and they did get a win actually on the road against Warsaw, which everybody's been beating. But yeah, so it's not in the bag, or it's not a lock. But Trabzonspor, I mean, they're looking pretty good for moving on. They've got 10 points in the group, and Lazio with 8 and Apollon with 4. So they're pretty much there. It's just, will they go to the knockout phase in style, you know, winning the group, or will they, you know, drop points and end up finishing second, I think is sort of the question.
Yeah. So that's really more of the question. I mean, Khan, you have anything to add on that?
Well, I don't think Trabzon will have too much issues at home. I hope not. They had some issues a couple of years ago. I think it was against Nicosia or something. So, you know, you never know, but I'm pretty confident they'll manage to pull it off. And hopefully they'll get a good opponent into the next round. Because, you know, with Fenerbahce and Galatasaray being excluded from European football, we need the teams that are active in Europe right now, Galatasaray and Trabzonspor, to do well.
You mean Fenerbahce and Beşiktaş. You said Fenerbahce and Galatasaray.
Oh, sorry, yeah, Fenerbahce.
Sort of anticipating the results, maybe.
We need Galatasaray and Trabzonspor to do well and get as far as possible. Like, we had a great season last year with Galatasaray and Fenerbahce doing tremendously. So let's hope this year we can get at least two teams in the quarterfinals of the Europa League. Yay.
Okay. All right, then. So that'll do it for this edition of Turkish Football Weekly. Jeremy, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me, as always. This was fun, having all three of us.
And Khan, thank you for kind of bumping in here and helping us out with a subject I think Jeremy and I probably would have floundered if it wasn't for your experiences with Sergen Yalçın.
Okay, thanks for having me. It was great fun.
Okay, so thank you for listening to Turkish Football Weekly this week, and we will see you all next time.